Major Hun, Reel 56. You're describing the system of the resupply of fuel in the field.
I think, unlike armoured car regiments, we had this echelon system where the immediate supplies were with your squadron headquarters. But with the tank using so much petrol, they would have individual petrol lorries that would be further back from the tanks naturally, and another separate lorry for ammunition. And so the supply was slightly different to what an armoured car agent would be.
And you'd have to have more vehicles to do it, presumably.
More vehicles, because it's heavier.
Heavier consumption.
Consumption of petrol.
Were these the standard 3-ton or 4-ton
yeah,
trucks?
Whatever they were on issue at the time.
Where did you get your overall supply from? Did you go back via brigade or via division to get your...
There would always be, certainly in peacetime, an OFP, Ordnance Field Park, or RASC petrol dump, RASC ammunition dump. They would be in different locations, and that's where they used to go back to.
But your vehicles would go back to them?
Yes.
And were they a core level unit or divisional level? Do you happen to know?
Divisional or core. But to go into one of those, it's amazing how much stuff they used to have in there. Of course, in peacetime, they used to take up a vast area. Of course, with the ammunition too, it had to be very carefully stored. When you take the amount of tanks in Germany or in a brigade, and the amount of ammunition they would require, the vast dumps.
Were these permanent or were they mobile?
Yes. No, in permanent. I know on exercises they used to bring stuff from there. The RASC used to bring stuff forward. And you'd go to their vehicle places as opposed to their main depots like that. So it was a case of them coming forward a bit with limited supply.
So how far back, roughly, would your B echelon have to go to get to the ordnance supply point?
Well, a lot of it would depend on the tactical situation, really. If you've done a fast move, you know, say 50 or 60 miles, that one to the distance that the rear vehicles would have to go back to replenish. So you couldn't lay down a hard and fast. The main dump like that couldn't move at the same speed as a regiment. So that remained there. And so you would then go back whatever distance you moved extra. And of course, if the battle was a real battle, and you went forward that far, eventually your main supply would come forward to shorten the line of communication, obviously. But then you had to make sure that you were pretty sound forward before you could do that. Otherwise, if you were overrun,
you'd lose the lot.
But that was all planned, I suppose, by department of a division or brigade.
Who did you report to? Because, I mean, this job you're doing really is a staff job, isn't it, of technical adjutant. It does involve a lot of staff work.
Oh, yes. Well, I used to deal with the Q department in a brigade, mainly a brigade, actually, the Q side, and also direct with OFPs, the Ordnance Supply Depots.
But within the regiment, were you part of headquarter company?
Yes. I was under the...
Well, headquarters squadron, it would be, wouldn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
And you report direct to the commanding officer?
Yes.
Mm. What sort of who was the commanding officer at that time in Fourth Hussars?
At the start, it was Colonel Steve Lee. Mm. He was an old Fourth Hussar, and he'd been taken prisoner in Greece. Mm. He came back and commanded the regiment. And later it was Colonel Luke Kennard, mm. who was a tremendous character. He had also been taken prisoner in Greece. But they were, and all the officers in that regiment were charming. Well, all 12th and 4th Hussars were charming gentlemen, mm. all of me. Mm. They were wonderful people, they really were. Luke Kennard was a great chap. The chaplains would love him. Mm. While he was commanding, we had Winston Churchill come out to spend a weekend with the regiment.
Were you in the field when he did that, or in barracks?
In the barracks. He slept in the Brady Beck mess, and we had a big parade for him. Mm. We had cocktail party, a dinner night, just for the officers of the regiment, dinner night, and then we had a big ball on the Saturday night, and nothing but the best came up for him. And I know it was at the time I was a captain, and my pay then was 19 and 6 a day. And after Winston Churchill had been to the regiment, I got my mess bill, and for his visit alone, it cost £45, which was my share as a captain. So it was 45 days' pay.
And more.
Mm. But that was the thing. I mean, as the colonel said, well, if you're in a club and you don't like it, you can leave. That's what he told one of the officers who sort of quibbled about it. But I mean, as it is, you're in a wonderful regiment. Mm. It was an honour to be with a regiment like that. And you have to make sacrifices if you want to stay in the regiment like that.
What sort of command style did they have in that? You know, did the commanding officer have formal conferences and briefings every day, or did he have
more? No, it depends on what it was. Mm. Each squadron was left to do their own training. They all submitted, obviously, a training program. Mm. You know, which would
that be a weekly thing, a training program?
No, not necessarily. Mm. Some of them, depend on what it was, would be a 3-month. Mm. If that was winter time, that'd be a different thing. But then troop training, and that would go to the colonel, who would approve it, or squadron training. Or he would organise the regimental training, you see. Mm. And you had your 3 squadrons, you had the colonel and the second command and the adjutant. And
what was the rough division then between troop training, squadron training, and regimental training?
Start off with the troop training, which the troop leader would then sort of take his troop out and give them normal troop tactics, mm. and any other individual training they needed. And that would be supervised by the squadron leader. And then from that, the squadron leader would take him out on an exercise as a squadron on different tactics and that sort of thing. And then, of course, the regimental would be when the regiment were involved, say, with a brigade exercise, and the colonel then operate with the regiment. The squadrons having done their training each, and take from there, really.
Have you an idea of, you know, did they spend more time on troop training than the squadron, or were they roughly?
Yes, I think more time was spent on troop training because it could be done simpler. Whereas mm-hmm. with the regimental trainers, you've got to get the area, and with regimental training, you've got to have an opposition. So that would be a brigade or divisional. But troop training can be done in various things. It needn't necessarily involve the tanks. They could go out in a lorry and do different sort of exercises without the troops or map reading and things like that, so you get more troop training than you would regimental training.
Do you have any idea of roughly how much training was done indoors as opposed to outdoors?
If they could get out, the conditions were right, because in Germany it used to be bitterly cold and probably couldn't get out easily to do it. You could do a lot indoors by training your troop to do other jobs. You could do a lot of map reading indoors and tests and tactical exercise without the troops with a sand table. And a lot depended on what the weather was like. If it was bitterly cold, then you could do it inside. But if the troops liked to get out on in their tanks and drive their tanks and be in their tanks, but it wasn't always possible. And then you start to have the restriction of track mileage. You were limited to how much you could do per year, and also the cost of petrol. That all started to come in much later.
Do you remember when that started to take effect on training?
I see probably in the '60s, around about between 55, 56. It wasn't too bad, but then you could see the cuts. You know, you were only allowed, I think, 800 miles, I think it was the track mileage. I think somewhere around about that. And you weren't allowed to exceed that. And of course, then they started rationing on petrol. It all started being cost.
How many regimental exercises would there be in a year? As you were saying, these were really brigade exercises because you'd have an opposition, but within a year, how many regimental?
I think you'd have one brigade, you'd have a divisional, and then, if possible, a much larger one. So I think they used to recommend about three big exercises in a year, and most of the other was regimental or troop.
Should be troop and squadron.
Squadron, troop and squadron, but again, it was pre-1953. Money was no object. That you had tremendous big exercise, but then gradually it started cutting back and cutting back. Because it wasn't only the cost of the tanks running, you had your, if they were going a long way, you'd have your transporters with the tanks loaded on them, travelling for miles. You know, the cost must have been horrendous. You start getting a regiment of, say, 48 tanks then, being transported halfway across Germany, coming back empty and getting another regiment.
Was the training a sort of regular cycle? Was it standardised from year to year, or did it change?
Not. You couldn't change much, really. The only time you changed is if you had different equipment. But it was mainly the same. Centurions were in then, and so the tactics were much the same, and the area one was in was the same, because the regiment would be in the same area like the 4th Hussars were in Homer, you know, about 6 or 7 years in the same place. So the troop leaders knew the training area like the back of their hands. So it's jolly difficult to work up a lot of enthusiasm, I think, for them. Because they knew everything, and most of the drivers knew which track to go down and what not to. And then they used to have their annual firing on the Hohner Ranges, where they were set different problems as they were firing live ammunition.
How long would that take, the annual shooting?
A regiment would be there, I think, for 2 weeks. That's a whole regiment. So it didn't mean the whole squadron. Each squadron was committed at the time, because you were again restricted on the amount of ammunition and the space. But the regiment used to go into camp.
Yes.
And then each squadron would then take its
time. How many rounds do you think they would fire through the main armament on a that fortnight's firing camp?
I'd only be guessing. I can't tell you. I think they tried to get each gunner to go through different things. So let's say if each gunner fired a dozen rounds, that was still a lot of money.
What could you do in between times to try and keep the gunner's skills up? Because, you know, if he's not firing live rounds...
Well, all you could do is just sort of practice, or say, so on, sort of pick out the object. And I think later they had one of these, what do they call them? Well, like the aircraft thing, where they could be simulators, weren't they?
Simulator, laser simulator.
That's right. They had those that they could have in the regiment, one of those, I think, where you could then take them in there.
Oh, so it's like a virtual reality machine.
That's right.
Yes.
Where you could pick up a tank or whatever on this, like a sand table type thing, wasn't it? You could then fire. I think at one time they used to have one which had a 2-2 or a pellet, and you could shoot at these things. But as I said, I wasn't involved much in that.
You weren't on that side?
No, it was the gunnery side. I think you used to look at it occasionally for interest, that sort of thing, but not, I wasn't involved in it.
What was there in Germany for recreation when you were not working?
Oh, they were good facilities, there were plenty of sports. In the summer there was all the athletic training, and there was boxing in the winter. I used to all run the regimental boxing team, and there was football, there was hockey, swimming, skiing in the winter, where they used to go up to Harzburg mountains. And we used to have some very good skiers in the regiment. Swimming in Hohenlohe was the swimming pool. Lots of sports grounds all around. So there's plenty to do, and there's a big roundhouse for theatre. There was a cinema in the house. There was plenty to keep one occupied and amused. One could take leave and go up to the Harzburg Mountains, or if they wanted to go home to England, they could move to.
How did you get on with the Germans when you met them?
Well, we seemed to get on well with them, really. I did anyway. I didn't find any. They were always very correct. A lot of the men were very military in their attitude. And at the early stage, we used to have officers' clubs around in various towns, which were staffed by Germans. I don't know what else really.
And was there much contact with the Germans? Did you have any social contact with them?
Not really. Not a lot, apart from the ones who you worked with. But socially, there wasn't so much later when you started meeting the people. And it was after a few years. And the staff in the nappies and all that were German staff.
Locally recruited.
But they were always very pleasant, you know. Some of them had a sense of humour, you know, but they were good. And your mess waiters were German, which were, again, they were very good, very polite, very polite.
How was it that you returned to your old regiment from the 4th Hussars?
The 4th Hussars. The regiment came back, the 12th came back to from Malaya.
Yeah.
Came out to Germany. And the first contact I had with them, I took the 4th Hussars boxing team down to the regiment, and you know, for a boxing match, and sort of made contact with the regiment again, having not sort of seen them for a long, long time. And then the colonel wanted me to go back to the 12th, Well,
which colonel was that?
No, he wasn't one I served with. What's his name? I'll think of later on, I think. But he wanted me back with the regiment. And because I was then torn, you know, for the loyalties now, but the old club and the Fourth Hussars, who had been very, very good to me. And Colonel Kennard was commanding the Fourth. John Medlicott was the colonel of the 12th. And they sort of did something. Well, I was torn. I said to Colonel, well, what do I do? I don't know. You know, I've got, you've been all very good to me. You know, I enjoy the regiment. You know, a wonderful regiment. And so it's a tug of war, really.
Mm-hmm.
And then Colonel Monckton, Lord Monckton, French chief, he took command at the 12th. And in the end, anyway, they said, right, 12th want you back. You know, they've got a claim on you that they want you. And so I didn't have a lot of choice, really. Well, I could have dug my heel in, I thought, well. And I think the 4th were about to amalgamate with the 8th Hussars at the time. So it had been an amalgamated regiment. So in the end, I finished up going back to the 12th.
Mm.
But not as ticked as badges. I went back as... originally, I went back to command HQ squadron. When I got back to the regiment, another officer had come back who was senior to me, who took command of HQ squadron, so I became second command.
Mm.
And which I enjoyed. I used to take HQ squadron out on exercises and things, and I did quite a lot of the training with them.
What was in HQ squadron?
Well, the band that came, which was a separate thing, you know, it just came under your command, really. The recce troop, the transport troop, and all the administration.
Mm. So, presumably this was a large squadron?
Oh, yes, about 200 odd men, I should think.
Mm. And what sort of vehicles did the regiment have when you rejoined them? Were they still an armoured car regiment?
They were still armoured cars, yes. AECs and that type of thing, but
because it was now 10 years after the end of the war, wasn't it? And
this is going to 1958.
Yes, that's 55 to 58.
58. Yes.
So they'd had the Greyhound, hadn't they, towards the end of the?
No.
The 4th Hussars had the Greyhound.
They only had one trooper Greyhound.
Yes.
That's right.
And Staghounds. I had some of those.
Yeah. And the 4th Hussars. I must check up on this.
Mm-hmm.
I think probably not getting into one and working on it. it's all gone from my memory, but I will check up and put that right.
So you were 2IC HQ squadron,
right.
And
I used to go off on. No, it wasn't then. I used to go off on. But whilst I was there, I went off on squad leader's tactical course, that's right, at Boddington.
What did you learn on that?
Quite a lot, really. Mm. It was sort of tactics, slightly like commanding officers sort of type tactics, as opposed to, say, a troop leader or what was called a squad leader's tactics, which was great for play fun. It was 2 weeks. In Lowood, we used to go out onto set problems and on tubes. I think there was probably about 24 others from other cavalry regiments on it, and there were a couple of Danes on it as well.
Oh, what impression did you get of them?
Very serious people, you know, took everything very, very seriously. But quite efficient, quite pleasant people. And apart from that, the job really was so easy. I mean, there is no challenge there.
As to IC.
Mm-hmm. So it was all the admin size, the MT and that, which you had your MTO, you had.
Presumably you had the
master's side.
Sergeant, regimental sergeant major.
That's so, right, mm. Yes. But there, you know, there was no challenge at all.
Mm.
And I got a bit bored with it, because, as I say, the job I had before was, you know, kept me on my toes all the time. But there wasn't a great deal for me to do.
If I can ask a bit more about the tactical course, the squadron leader, you said you did toots and mm-hmm. problems. Was the whole course based around problem solving? Was that the main method?
Yes. You'd go out into the, we were out in the field every day.
Yeah.
And you would be given a problem. You know, there's enemy holding that hill, and what would you do here or there? Who would you employ? Who would you call up? You've got a troop of sappers attached to you. You've got a troop of battery of guns at your disposal, an infantry, and you'd be set that type of problem of how you would take that hill.
So this was for, was this for tank rather than for armoured car?
Oh, tank.
Oh, I see.
More than tank. Because I think out of that, I think I was probably the only one from armoured cars there. The rest of them were 1721st and that type of officer. So it was mainly a tank problems, which was very interesting. And every day you went to a different place around Lulworth.
So you had different ground to look at.
That's right. Mm. You get set problems, and then you would split up into syndicates, and then give your answer, and then we'll get together and hear each other's answers to the problem.
Sounds a very open method of instruction.
Well, it was very good. Never to say it took 2 weeks. It was very good.
And you were saying that you weren't really stretched as 2IC headquarters squadron.
I took a trip up to Berlin for a long weekend. That was interesting, because we had to get our special passes made, and they were very, very strict. And I drove my car there, and I took Bob McGuire with me. And you had to go up the autobahn after the checkpoint. You weren't allowed to stop at all. For no reason at all. If you broke down, you were instructed to stay in your car until a vehicle would come down and pick you up. And you were timed from the time you left the checkpoint till you got to the other checkpoint. Which is very strange, really. The Russians are in the Russian zone. But it was quite interesting to have look back Berlin. But it was only there for, I think, about 3 days. And that was all done privately. It wasn't done through the regiment. You had to make your own arrangements, which you could do.
What was the role of the 12th Royal Lancers then in Germany at that time?
Well, we were up at Wolfenbüttel, which was right on the, well, below the Harz Mountains, and the Russian defences were all along there, and their posts, what they used to call lookout posts. The troops used to just drive along and back and that sort of thing, and just showed themselves
So you were actually going right up to the wire of the frontier.
Just opened the wrong.
Did you see anything of similar Soviet forces on the other side?
No,
ever?
No. You just see the people in their outpost, you know. Mm. But, nothing else at all.
But there